listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of 9ES, the 9to5 Entertainment System. If you enjoy the show, do yourself a favor, do us a favor, do everyone a favor, and go to patreon.com/9to5cc and subscribe to the I Love 9ES level. By doing that, you'll get access to Garbage Time, which is a bonus episode that we record each and every episode of 9ES. On our bonus episode, we talk about Scarlett Johansson, the Crow, and Battleworld in Marvel Comics from 2015. But on this, the main episode, we talk about Poor Things, Madam Web, The Running Man, Jake Paul vs. Mike Tyson, Dune 2, and I get assigned a movie that I don't even think is a movie. It's a miniseries, but somehow it was also a movie. You know what? Listen. Listen to the show, guys. Enjoy.
This was like exactly. On purpose, but like for fun.
We do that? A show where once in a while we make each other, like as a feature of this podcast that you're listening to, we once in a while make each other watch terrible movies. And Scott was like, no, I want to damn myself and watch one of the consensus worst movies of the year.
Oh yeah.
Of the superhero genre entirely. Mm-hmm. Madam Web.
It's very bad.
Why? But like, okay, but so how does this happen? You know it's bad.
Por qué?
Yeah, like there's other things.
Okay.
I watched Poor Things over the weekend, and that was
a good movie.
It was a real good fun movie. It's delightful.
Isn't that
Disney
the movie
Plus?
That has like a 10-year-old having sex? I don't want to.
It's complicated. it's the brain of an infant doing furious jumping.
Furious jumping.
Yeah, no, I hate that.
It's feminist, huh?
Yeah, it's more whimsical than you think.
Or is it? I mean, I don't know.
I hate that sentence, Keith.
What? It's more whimsical than you think? I had to sell to TChad. TChad's like, I don't want to watch it because of this. And I was like, I had the same reservations, but like...
It's seriously art. Like, there's no getting away from it. It's like what the movies are made for, you ask me. It's challenging and weird and fucking funny and crazy and full of sex. Just full of sex,
and it's not really arousing. It's not good sex. It is
furious jumping.
It is described by the childlike brain inside of the woman's grown body. So the body is grown, right? Uh-huh. So it is not like a
is that all you care about? Because I mean, that's the feminist message right there, isn't it?
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying. But it is like you have to like jump through some loops to understand like what is happening to this, and her caretaker is atrocious.
Is he not hilarious though? And like the it's so easy to redeem him in a predictable kind of way, and he's not redeemed in a predictable way, but he is also kind of redeemed
somewhat.
Like, it's somewhat, you know.
Now
it's
I
so
understand
good.
Why
so
my
good.
Father branded my genitals. I cannot naturally produce gastric acid. My father removed it. Yeah, it's super weird, but like I said, it is. More whimsical than anything. Yeah, I would, and it's on Disney Plus, so it's there. It's there for you to watch.
Really?
Because it's Disney Plus is in our country has like Star, where they're merging all the Hulu content, and apparently it's going to be even like that in the United States too. So it's like you have to have like obviously your child settings to like off.
Yeah, I was going to say this is a very rated R film. I thought Disney Plus was mostly like family.
No, not anymore. They're trying to.
Well, they bought all the Fox stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. So they're kind of shuffling that around. And even in the state, like we call it Star, and in the States, all of the Hulu content, I think, is coming over at some point this year. There's all kinds of like rated R stuff on that and all the FX stuff. So anyway, Poor Things, a lot of fun. But instead of doing that, you were like, I'm going to pay money, wink, to watch Madam Web.
Yep.
Was it your call? Were you like, hey, honey, movie night.
It's Webbin' time.
I got an idea.
We had either picked Madam Web or Argyle. And the
both sound like poor choices. I heard Argyle was real hot garbage.
What's Argyle? I don't even know.
It's the new spy movie with the Kingsman and what's his name? Played Superman.
Oh,
the Witcher.
Kingsman was alright.
The second
one
was not.
Kind of, I was going to say they've been kind of going downhill.
Yeah.
Well, not downhill. The King's Man was fun, the throwback one.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot more than Kingsman 2. But like, yeah, it's apparently all the ridiculous elements of Kingsman and none of the likable characters or anything. Apparently, it's a pretty big mess.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway,
we picked Madam Web because it was 15 minutes shorter.
The thing, it didn't have to be a lesser of two evils evening, you know? There's good things to watch.
All right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I understand I have a lot more patience for bad superhero movies than both of you and most other people. Because sure. I really love comic books. And I grew up in
You haven't watched
a time...
all the Harley Quinn yet. You haven't watched all the Harley Quinn yet. You know what you could have done at that
seasons.
Time? You could have... you could have watched like four episodes of Harley Quinn, and that would have been a much better use of your time.
Yes, but Riss hasn't watched it, so I wouldn't have been able to do that. I've got much more patience. The thing I love is comic books, and I'm excited that we live in a time where there's like a bunch of comic book movies out there.
Mm-hmm.
So
this
I'm
year,
okay
there's three
with...
of them coming out from the Sony Studios.
Oof. Three, boy.
Three whole comic book movies coming out from Sony Studios. Only one from Marvel Studios. Three of them coming out from Sony.
But it's what Kraven?
Kraven, Venom, The Last Dance. Which they're calling Venom, The Last Dance, which I'm already in love with. Because the Venom ones are the only ones in my mind that have nailed it in terms of being completely
The second
bonkers.
One was not great either, though.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't morbid.
Wait a minute. No, Keith. How did you like the second Venom movie? Because... the third act featured a 20-minute CGI fight between a good guy and a bad guy that had the same powers.
I think it was a huge step down from the first. And yes, it just had Venom and Carnage, which was an awful fight, and the CG was not even very good. Like
that is
that
like
fight.
Your number one critique of every superhero movie you've ever seen,
yeah,
and it did it expressly
worst.
And very poorly.
It did it in under 2 hours, though, which I approved. Of.
Oh, well, then you'll love Madam Web. No. You will love Madam Web then.
It's like 78.
Definitely under 2 hours.
Yeah, I guess like when Carnage and Venom are throwing down in Venom 2, it's like maybe at the hour and 20 minute point. And I was like, well, whatever, here it goes. It's over now. I just want Eddie Brock and Venom to admit that they love each other in the third film. I'm shipping the symbiote and Eddie in ways the comics never have.
Oh god. The Madam Web does the unforgivable sin. It's bad. It's boring. It doesn't make sense. Even in its own creation of the universe. Like mm-hmm. Morbius is bad. I wouldn't call it boring. And it certainly at least loves itself, even if no one else really will. Right? Like as much as you can hate that movie for so many, many reasons, it doesn't feel like it's filled with self-loathing in the way that Madam Web does.
Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were saying, like, nobody, from watching the film, you ascertained that nobody on, like, on set, acting, writing, nobody really cared about this movie at all.
No,
and it was just
I
like everybody was like 3
paid,
p.m.
But I don't think
time.
They cared... that anyone was actually going to watch this.
And that's the problem.
I think they were all fine going to work, and then they're just like, hey, how are the audiences going to react? And they're just like, I don't care at all.
Making movies would be great if it wasn't for the audiences.
Yeah.
That was my complaint about Danzig's Veronica. Nobody looked like they were having fun.
And there's huge, like, mile-high gaping plot holes that are needless.
Yeah, I watched the pitch meeting for it, and they were like, what?
How did a wanted criminal get on an airplane? Well, it was 2003. Airport security was pretty lax back then.
famously, 2 years removed from 9/11. Like, yeah,
possibly
just driving around a stolen taxi cab.
For 2 weeks.
Parking it at the airport.
And getting back in after the airport, she goes away for a week. She goes to find a spot in the Peruvian rainforest.
That she identifies with a photograph of a tree.
With a Polaroid. And she walks there. And she goes there.
Super easy. Barely inconvenience.
Oh my god. She goes there to meet an ancient animalistic tribe of spider people.
Mm-hmm.
Who instantly recognize her, greet her, and speak perfect English. I hate it so much.
Wait. Hold on. Could this be explained by spider magic?
No.
Are there spider spirits guiding the spider people back to their spider home?
No, because every time there's a spider spirit, it is on screen with a mystical glowy web dragging her around. But not this.
This is not that.
Oh, God.
It's a Polaroid.
Yeah. In Peru.
Wow.
And then all the other spider women just have a dance-off in a diner or something?
Well, they're three teenage girls, and they've just been assaulted by an evil Spider-Man and almost
Ezekiel,
killed
what's his face?
Ezekiel. And they were just like, okay, we have to hide away from technology. But also I'm hungry. So let's go to the diner and eat. And also flirt with that entire basketball team. And wait, someone recognizes them because he's got a newspaper that says, you know, three girls have been kidnapped by evil person, which happened 2 hours ago.
You know, in the newspaper.
Wait, what?
So the Madam Webb gets accused of kidnapping these three people. And for some reason, the Daily Bugle is able to put this on the front page of their newspaper and publish it and print it and ship it into New Jersey. Within 3 hours. Just like big, gaping, dumb plot holes.
And again, this sounds fun in a stupid way, but everything I've read is that it's not like, it's doing this at a 7. If it was doing all this at a 10, you'd be like, what a wild ride.
Like Sydney Sweeney is playing one of the Spider Girls, and she's like, I don't know, probably the biggest star in the movie.
Yeah, probably.
Her character is like, I can picture this meeting. Okay, so tell me about Julia. What kind of character I'm playing? Well, she's a young, pretty high school girl. Uh-huh. And she's naive. Great. Like, what else is going on? Nothing. That, what? We're done here. Like, say the line. It's bad.
And it's like also like otherwise like a towel. Like, I mean, she gets a lot of attention for her boobs. Let's be real. But she's like a talented actress and has like a huge range. Like in Handmaid's Tale, she played like the super devout Catholic girl. She's also done like high school dits, but then turns out with like a lot of like complications in depth and like Euphoria and stuff. Like Sydney Sweeney has like a reasonably good range and is not just like a pretty face, and then you're just like, no.
She's the girl with the glasses.
Don't bring anything to the table. all of your talent, leave it behind you.
Hold on.
Jeremy Irons and Dungeons and Dragons notes.
In the opposite direction, though. I want less. Give me less.
Less. Wait, but Dakota Johnson is the most famous thing she's done was 50 Shades of Grey. Like she's like a Hollywood Nepo baby.
The remake of Suspiria, Bad Times at the El Royale. Wasn't she in a thing with, what's his face? The guy who did Drive?
Ryan Gosling?
No, not Ryan Gosling, the director.
I don't know. I've never thought, even at Bad Times at the El Royale, I really did not think that she was she was not saving up that movie. Like, there was plenty of good things.
Yeah.
I like Bad Times at the El Royale, but she was the easily the most forgettable part about it because I forgot that she was in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, like there's talent in this film. There's like a good number of talent. Even the what do you call it? Like Adam Tally, Adam
Scott,
Adam what's his face? Adam Scott. Yeah, that's it. And he's kind of like, I mean, let's call him a C+ B- player, but he's on like that big Apple show Severance, like.
So Madam Web can see the future.
Recognizable faces in this.
Madam Web can see the future, and she cracks like two jokes. That Ben Parker,
about Ben dying,
her best friend in the world, just meeting an untimely early death. Just like, no, you won't.
Yeah, I can't wait to get old and get to know my. You're not getting old, Ben. You sucker!
Oh, it's going to be so fun being an uncle to this kid. It's like all the fun and none of the responsibility. That's not true, Ben. What? It's just like an evil fortune cookie. It's awful. For no reason. For no reason is she like this. And then It's like at the very end of the movie, they realize that Madame Web is blind in the comics, like canonically.
Well, I mean, she's also old. Blind. Let's be fair. She's also old.
Just old and blind. And
even like aging her 20 years to now doesn't make her Madame Web old. Madame Web is like 80 in the comics. Like, if they're saying it's 2003, so when we get to the main storyline, she'll be old. I'm like, she'll be 45?
like 50 in, max. In the animated series, she was voiced by June Lee, Stan Lee's wife, who was in her 80s in that cartoon series in the 90s. Like, ugh. Yeah. But even then, it was just like, wait, we can't make a movie about a blind woman, because who would want to watch that? But she needs to be blind at the end of it. So she goes through this whole journey and learns her powers and defeats the bad guys, and then a firework hits her in the face. The very last second.
Didn't see that coming.
They blow up a firework factory.
Like the Simpsons joke.
Like, that's the end, is they blow up a firework factory.
Like, the bad guys do it, or the web girls do it?
Web girls do it. Specifically to confuse the evil Spider-Man that's trying to kill them.
Huh.
He's like, it's a death trap.
Then a big Pepsi sign falls on the Spider-Man.
There's so much product placement in this movie, too. And also, weird product placement. Like, she drinks Pepsi a bunch, and then the big Pepsi sign kills the bad guy. You're like, is that okay? Does Pepsi kill you in the end? What's the message?
Yeah, it kills the bad guy. You're not a bad guy, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Don't drink Pepsi if you're a bad guy. But Pepsi, for good guys only. Okay.
Then she falls off the Pepsi sign and gets hit by a firework. So too much Pepsi makes you blind.
No, too many fireworks make you blind.
So, Pepsi.
Public service announcement. But yeah, like I said, it really sounds like all of this sounds amazing, but you say that it is so flat.
If
all of this happened at a 10 o'clock, like I would enjoy as a viewer if someone was just sort of like, hey, those are the girls from the newspaper. And you're like, when is that published? You're like, 5 minutes ago or like whatever. Like, I'd be like, this is insane. And I love everything that's happening if it's like delivered campy and insane, but it's not. It's just like flat and boring and nobody's having fun with this insanity.
Exactly. It's the difference between Arrow season 1 and Arrow season 6. Like, Arrow season 1, he's like, you have failed the city. And he shoots a bunch of people with arrows, and he does it every week. And you're just like, this is great. He's like the Batman who stabs people with his bow and arrow. And then season 6 is like, no one wants to be here anymore. Half the cast has left already. The writers don't know what to do anymore because they've run out of bad guys with bows and arrows. So they're making them fight evil magicians. So Arrow's going to have to learn the power of love through magic to defeat him. And everyone just wants to go home, and they just really desperately hope the show's getting canceled so they don't have to do this anymore.
Amazing.
And that's what happens at the start of this movie. Just like, maybe this will get canceled like Batgirl. That's the only thing I can think about them making this movie. Maybe this will never see the light of day, and we'll all get paid and we can just go home. But Sony was like
no. and it's also their Venom made like $800 million or something. Yep. Like, Venom made bank on like $100 million budget. Even Venom 2 made like $500 million, which for reference, and I know that this is like pre-pandemic and all that stuff, everybody's making a big deal that Dune 2 just made $500 million, and I was like, yo.
Okay, but Dune 2 is a bit of an art sci-fi whatever flick.
But Venom is a hot trash garbage machine. Like,
it's superheroes.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I'm saying. But like but that's the bar. Like, and like, Dune deserves to make $500 million and whatever else.
But
like,
Venom 2 did not.
Venom 2 absolutely did not. Even Morbius made like $110 million on like an $80 million budget. So like, yeah, not great. This one technically still broke even because it had like an $80-something million budget and had like a $90 million. But like, the highs of this series have dwindled from $800 million to $90 million in 4 iterations of the Sony Spider, whatever the hell they're doing verse. Like,
I read that it was something about keeping control over the IP. Like, they have to produce X number of films per year or whatever.
It's not that many.
Sure, it's not 3 a year.
I don't know. Maybe they saw a gap in the Marvel production schedule and were like, "That's it. This is our time to shine. Everything's coming up, Sony."
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's freaking Spider-Verse ruined their minds. They're just like, "We won a goddamn Academy Award. We can write."
Didn't win
anything.
A second one though.
Couldn't win a second one though. Who is that guy?
Yeah. Who? Huh?
No, the guy who won this year. What's his name? The director. Whatever. He's garbage.
Miyazaki?
Oh, yeah, Miyazaki. I've never heard of him.
Like, I feel there's no, when people were just sort of like, Spider-Verse didn't win, but I'm like, I feel there's worse things than losing to Miyazaki in animated feature, though. Like,
everyone else understood except for Shameik Moore. Who came out and said, like,
he was like, robbed.
We robbed.
I mean, well, you're entitled to your opinion. He like clarified. Like, I think
I was
great,
just
but...
mad. Which is a fair apology. I'm ready to accept that apology. That's a fair... I was mad. I wanted to win. I thought we should have won. Cool. You're still wrong.
Yeah, it's fine. And like, it was just like one word, like, robbed. Like,
you're welcome to your hot take, but... You know, no one agreed with you.
Whatever, I haven't seen the new Miyazaki, so I can't... I did see the new Spider-Verse, so I can't... And it was great. The new Spider-Verse was real, real good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so yeah, the Spider-Verse movies are doing well, but those Spider-Man movies are so weird and bad.
I would rather watch Morbius twice than watch Madam Web again.
The only thing I care about with those Spider-Verse movies is that they, because they're talking about, there's already rumors that they're just pulling the plug on the whole thing and whatever, especially if like Kraven does badly again. Like,
how can Kraven not do badly? That movie looks dumb as dirt.
Yeah, it really does. He's a hero, which is wrong. All wrong.
Extremely wrong.
Just like right out the gate. At no point, at least Venom was sometimes an anti-hero in the comics. And like, yes, frequently an anti-hero.
And
Kraven's
also
never a
and
good
also
guy.
Loved, right? You talk to Eric. Eric loves Venom. There are people like that all over the
Venom
place.
Pushes, like, I would say up until like, you know, like Deadpool really took off. Like Venom pushed merch in the Marvel universe another way. Like you see tons of Venom t-shirts and stuff. Now it's largely been replaced with Deadpool. But I would say, like, if you were like an edgy teenager, you're like, give me a hat with the Venom eyes on it.
Those are peanut butter and chocolate for Marvel, right? Those two guys go together and appeal to that audience. I do not know that there's a lot of Madam Web merch that was floating out demanding this movie.
First of all, yeah, exactly. That's it. Like Venom, people know Venom.
People
Morbius,
love Venom.
Starting to be a bit of a stretch, but I'm like, I feel there's people that know Morbius, especially he played pretty frequently in the. I personally know Morbius from the '90s cartoon. He was like in an entire arc, and like, yeah, you're in an entire arc of the '90s cartoon. You're okay by me, Morbius. Madam Web,
and actually,
get out of here.
Could have been an anti-hero, right? Like, the arc there is not... Because it's Jekyll and Hyde, right?
Yeah,
I want a cure. Something's gone wrong. I'm turned myself into the living vampire. My soul is tormented.
I feel like Morbius is a good guy sometimes.
I mean, he's a Spider-Man villain, because he hungers for blood. And then in the 90s, when Venom did well as an anti-hero, they were like, Morbius hungers for blood of criminals.
And you're
like, okay, that's fine. Punisher does that, so I guess everyone can do that now.
Yeah. Madam Web, everybody's favorite Spider-Man character, Madam Web. Followed by everyone's second favorite character, Kraven. Is he even in the Sinister Six? I think, like, sometimes. But, like, he's no one's favorite.
But also, one, he's no one's
nobody's
favorite. Two, he's such a pure bad guy.
Yeah, he just loves hunting and killing.
And the best comic book he was
and
ever
like
in.
And illegally hunting. He loves illegally hunting.
Yeah. And the best comic book he was ever in, Kraven's Last Hunt, famously ends with him putting a shotgun in his mouth and blowing his brains out.
Yay!
He's like, I've proven I can beat Spider-Man, and now I can die. Splam! How are they making
mommy,
that?
Mommy, get me this Kraven comic book.
Right. Get me a lion skin that I can wear. John, that was a spinner rack, like mid-80s. You got that at the corner store. Kraven's Last Hunt. That's.
Whew. You could do anything you wanted in the 80s. But yeah, so as long as they don't pull the plug on this whole entire thing before Donald Glover gets to do his Hypno Hustler movie, because I have a tremendous amount of desire to see a Donald Glover, apparently like written and produced and starring Hypno Hustler Sonyverse film. I feel that he will understand that it will be cranked to 11 at all times. That'll probably make some money. If it's bonkers, complete batshit.
I just... There's also so much like rewrites and reshoots and ADR. And there are people that are talking. Their lips don't move and they say completely different things. And they cut to almost still frames of other people in the scene so they can have the voiceover without the lips gone.
Oh my God.
So like the person isn't talking. They're just staring off at the character. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And like dialogue is coming shooting at them rather than reshoot. It's so
and yet not the
hour.
Most important line of dialogue of all.
Oh, God, I don't even...
My mother died while she was in the Amazon studying spiders.
Keith, I don't even know how you could make this a camp classic. Like, it's not there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like no one's having fun with it. Like the whole point of like campy films is usually like you're like, oh, this is trash, but everybody's having fun. So I'm having fun.
I watched Blade 2 not long ago. The Del Toro one. That movie is just campy fun at every point. Everyone is having a good time. You can tell. You know, it's a vampire that hunts other vampires. You have to stop it, Blade. It's great. Ron Perlman's hamming it up nonstop. They create grenades that fire sunlight. You're just like, awesome.
Well, it's the part, like, I could watch those Venom movies with no action scenes whatsoever and just watch Tom Hardy talking to the symbiote. Like, it's ridiculous. I would just watch a show of day-to-day Tom Hardy walking around New York City being like, eat her, Andy. I won't eat her, blah, blah, blah. Eat her! It's ridiculous. And he appears to be having a great deal of fun with his stupidity. Mm. For a man who seems like anti-fun in like life, he seems to just really be enjoying playing
the
this
movie,
ridiculous
what
version
you're saying
of Eddie
Brock. Is missing like an Alan Rickman from Robin Hood, you know, like hamming it up to save the production.
Yeah, like if someone was like cranking it to 11, anybody.
Do you know what that is? Let's think of Dungeons and Dragons. It's the difference between the first Dungeons and Dragons movie with Jeremy Irons and Dragons of Autumn Twilight.
The cartoon?
Yeah,
the cartoon.
Right,
Madam Web is just
the Dragons of Autumn Twilight was just boring, whereas the first Dungeons and Dragons movie, at least you had Jeremy Irons screaming every line, and you're just like, this is terrible, but I'm watchable.
But
like,
I'm laughing
in a weird
at
way.
It. At least I'm laughing, even if I'm laughing at it, compared to, like, Autumn Twilight. We were just like, oh, man, there's, like, 40 minutes more.
How is there still an hour of this?
Yeah.
I don't think any of us are ever going to watch Madam Web unless you make me watch it via the thing. So we could. I don't know if you want to do that to me or throw it on the list.
Let's throw it on the list.
We haven't added it to the list for a while.
Yeah.
Scrolling to the bottom.
Where's Jason Bourne?
I don't know.
Just that was my.
What
first
do I have this thing memorized?
Which Jason? Oh, Jason Bourne, 235.
Yeah, the bad one.
Just above Cats by Tom Hooper, and underneath Batman: The Killing Joke.
Ooh, I don't know if it's as bad as The Killing Joke. Okay.
Man, the Love Guru is pretty fucking horrible.
Let's go up a little bit then. Independence Day Resurgence.
Painful. The Emoji Movie?
You
Thunder struck. Force. How about Thunder Force?
What number is Thunder Force?
226?
Thunder
Force is just below London Has Fallen. So here's two movies you've watched, right?
Yeah.
So Thunder Force and United Passions are 227 and 228.
I was
and
talking,
London Has Fallen. So those
I was talking with John about United Passions.
Yeah.
That movie haunts me with its badness. I think about it randomly, like once a month, How did that get made? It's so bad, it hurts.
Well, I mean, we know how it got made. It's a FIFA propaganda machine. Like, that's how it got made. Was one of the most, like, powerful and important sports organizations was like, boy, we've done some terrible things in our past. Hold on.
Powerful and corrupt sports organizations. Yes. You know, you gotta...
Yeah.
Come on, you got Star Wars Episode 2 and 3 to calibrate.
Yeah, I would put it under London Has Fallen and above Thunder Force.
All right.
And it's in Thunder Force.
Personally, I haven't seen it, but I have seen Xanadu. And I would put it below Xanadu, because Xanadu was campy fun, if nothing else.
Man, Michael Beck made it so unenjoyable. But
It has to go above United Passions, though, because I can't. It's been years since I put it on, and every now and then I'm just like, wow, that movie was bad.
So
above Thunder Force.
I also think that there's something delightful, personally, of putting it below Thunder Force, to say that Thunder Force was a better superhero movie than Madame Web.
It wasn't, though. Thunder Force upset me. It was offensive.
So we're saying below
London Has Fallen, above Thunder Force at the new 227.
That's still above United Passions.
Yeah. Again, United Passions gets worse the longer this goes.
You're like, I might need to recalibrate United Passions,
because it sticks with me with how bad it was. But even then, I kind of like where United Passions is. Like, Look Who's Talking Now and The Love Guru. Jason Bourne, Cats, like, those are some real bad movies. Mm-hmm. United Passions is shot well, directed well, and acted with quality. It's just, there's like an evil seeping out of it.
Yeah, the way you talk about United Passions, it makes me feel that, like, Cats should be higher. or United Passions should be lower. Because Cats is dog shit, but, like, There's something
watching it,
and you're like, this is insane.
Here's why United Passions goes up.
Insane.
If you showed it to someone who has no idea about anything FIFA related,
oh, you'd be like, wow,
they'd be like, this
is great,
is fine.
Organization.
Maybe not even great. They'd just be like, oh, this is fine.
Okay.
It's a fine movie. It doesn't burn you. It's the forbidden fruit.
Right?
It's the apple and eating.
Yeah, it's like watching a modern day propaganda film, and you're like, what? How do they still make these? We all have the internet.
These are all bad people. They've done bad, bad things. They saved the game. Oh God.
So something. Go ahead.
I want to go back to something. Scott there said, he mentioned we were having a conversation. We talked about that. The FIFA movie. Yeah. That conversation came out because I was mentioning that I had watched most of Demolition Man back like 2 weeks ago or something.
Okay.
And I hadn't seen it, honestly, in maybe ever. It might have been the first time I saw it.
Not Demolition Man.
No?
Running Man.
The Running Man. It was right.
Running Man. Running Man and Demolition Man are very different.
Stallone and it got me thinking about, like, the quality of 80s action movies, right? I was a little kid growing up, you know. It was like the early 90s, all of these movies were floating around. My parents never let me watch any of that shit. They all said that it was horrible, stupid, it's senseless violence, right? And you go down the list of, like, movies like Aliens, Predator, Demolition Man, or
Running
I should
Man.
Say the Running Man, Running Man, you know, you could go down a list of 80s schlock action movies, and the quality of those films compared to the, like, action movie Marvel staple, which is kind of what has occupied the role of action film in the last 10 years, they have so much fucking more to say. Like, The Running Man is like, in a sense, more relevant today than it was in 1980. And even if Predator was like a gigantic violence monster movie, it still had something under the hood. There was, like, thought put into the character, the, you know, character development within that thing. You know, it makes me sad. We don't get movies like Predator anymore. There's surely somebody out there has something clever to say within the space of an action schlock film. And instead, you get, like, the CG fight at the end for 45 minutes, the same fucking watered-down characters. It's
I was looking it up because, for some reason, in my head, I had Running Man based on a Ray Bradbury story, but it's based on a Stephen King story.
Yeah.
But it's like Bradbury-esque.
Like, kind of. Yeah.
Like, it would not surprise me if it was like one of those like Ray Bradbury, when Ray Bradbury wrote all those weird like pulpy sci-fi stories Playboy magazine.
It was awesome. Hold on, but it might not have been a Stephen King book. Was it a Richard Bachman book?
Yeah, it was Richard Bachman. It was, but
the Richard Bachman book was not the one that the movie was based on.
Said it is very loosely based on, according to the Wikipedia page, it says it's very loosely based on the 1982 novel of the same name written by Stephen King, published under Richard Bachman pseudonym.
Yeah, there was four, right? The Rage, The Long Walk, The Running Man, and I don't remember what the other one was.
But apparently it's very, very loose, right? Like they crank it up for the MTV era and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like,
it was great. It was freaking fantastic, funny, man. Yeah.
I would watch Running Man almost any Friday night of the week.
The director had a crazy ass career, man.
Let's see, who directed this biz?
Paul Glaser.
Okay.
He had directed some like TV stuff beforehand. This was his first big movie. And then he directed The Cutting Edge, The Air Up There, and Kazam.
Running Man news that I didn't know until this moment. Do you know that there is a new movie adaptation of the novel, but I hope more adaptation of the film is in development?
I did not.
By Edgar Wright?
What? Oh, hell yeah.
I'd be super down for an Edgar Wright helmed Running Man.
Who would be the game show host that you would use? Because Richard Dawson was like famous
Drew Carey,
game show host.
Drew Carey.
As like the evil, everyone loves him.
Oh my god. I bet he's chopping at the bit to do an evil character.
Yeah, like just his Price is Right persona cranked to evil. Super great. I'd watch that. Mm-hmm. It'd be an amazing, amazing take for Drew Carey.
Yeah. Do it, Drew. I know you're listening.
Make it happen. If Edgar, I swear to God, if this movie comes out and Drew Carey is, I'll be like, we called it. Episode 306, baby.
Can we X at him? Do you X at people anymore?
I don't know.
I deleted mine.
Ah.
I tried to tag you the other day.
I will not have seen it.
There he goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Running Man's great. A lot of those. And honestly,
who does that anymore?
To tie it to Madame Web, that was when they made the first Venom movie. I was hopeful for that. Like, I was like, oh, cool. They're going to, like, they can make these, like, weird, schlocky, insane things that are not, like, glossy Marvel MCU for, like, $100 million, $80 to $100 million, and they can make it $100 million. That'll be fine. But then the Sony fucked it up immediately. It just did not.
Dude, it's Sony.
Did not capture that tone.
They've been fucking everything up for so long. Sony. Sony Pictures.
Did you ever play? Probably not. You never had a Wii. Mad World.
Do you know what? That's why the first Spider-Verse movie worked, because it grabbed a bunch of villains, didn't really explain too much about them, had them fuck shit up. It's a lot like The Running Man. It's Sub-Zero. It's Buzzsaw. It's Scorpion. It's the Prowler. Like, they just...
You're like, you feel when you're watching The Running Man that you're like, is this like adapted from a TV show and should I know who these people are? You're like, no.
No.
It doesn't matter. Some of them will be very important. Some of them will die in 5 seconds. Like, and you have no way of knowing which is which.
It kind of got us all ready for American Gladiator. Like, their names, Fireball and Dynamo. Like, that was right there. Buzzsaw.
Jesse the Body Ventura shows up as already too old.
Was American Gladiators on before or after?
No, it was after. It was after. Early 90s.
Just after.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, I was going to say.
I mean, it may well have been.
So 87 was Running Man, and 89 is American Gladiators. So, like, I feel that they watched that, and they were like,
A to B.
Well,
let's do it. Some exec is like, we're going to do the Running Man. And you're like, well, we can't kill people.
Oh.
Can we do it without them killing each other? I guess so. I mean, we'll good enough, I suppose.
We'll shoot fireballs at them. We can't shoot fireballs at them. We'll shoot tennis balls at them. Okay.
Give them big, big, like, battling things with blades on them. What? No, big, puffy things. Again, we can't stress this enough. They can't kill each other for real. Some studio exec just really wanted to do The Running Man.
Do you remember the TV show Roller Games? It was on right after American Gladiators.
Yes.
Do you remember that had an alligator pit in the first season?
No.
Yes.
People there was a jump. Skates and an alligator pit?
Yep. There was a jump in the track that had over real alligators.
I do have some memories, and I feel they were always, like, sleeping. The alligators were nonplussed.
They were nonplussed.
Now that and you then... say it, I'm thinking of it, and they're just, like, in the corner and maybe asleep.
Yep.
And then they're probably, like, super sedated.
And then they took them out. Because you're on a roller skates, and people are trying to hit you.
Mm-hmm. Don't follow the big-ass back track.
That was probably the closest we got to Running Man.
Yeah.
Well, there's time yet. There's plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Civilization's collapsing. We could get a Running Man on TV yet.
I hope so. One can hope. Mm-hmm. We're close to that with, what do you call it, phone booth fighting in Russia. Have you guys seen those videos?
No.
I mean, slap fight, not far.
Slap fight's not far. Phone booth fighting, though, they pummel each other. Like, so it's basically like two like MMA flunkies who they lock in a phone booth, and then they just go like MMA style on each other, but like in a phone booth. So it's just like point blank punching and headbutts, and they both just come out like cauliflower and bleeding and puffy face. Yeah.
You're
like, cool. Thanks, Russia.
There's exciting UFC news. Connor's back in the news. I mean, and also there's the Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight.
My lead into the Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight was that Mike Tyson, the headline that we all wanted is Mike Tyson is training with Tool lead singer Maynard.
What?
So Maynard from Tool is really really into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Uh-huh. Recently achieved his black belt, like really into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and has his own legitimate like training environment or whatever for BJJ. And Mike Tyson is doing at least part of his camp at Maynard's training facilities.
I watched a video Tyson put out of him doing training, and then I saw a whole bunch of comments underneath it saying he doesn't have any sweat on his shirt. It's obviously bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you do with that?
Did you see those videos of him training? He is still very strong.
Dude is still fucking jacked.
Knows how to throw a punch really, really well.
I don't know if we talked about it on this show or if it was another show or whatever, but I was reading an article from a boxer who was like in his 70s. And he was saying that like, when I was in my 50s, I absolutely had lost all of my speed and like all of my footwork and whatever, but my actual punching power was about where it was in my prime. Like that's the punch I could like in my 50s, like he's like, absolutely. He could not move, could not professionally box, but in terms of like how hard I could hit as a man was on point. So it's either going to be 5 seconds and hilarious, or it's going to be 10 rounds of them hugging each other because he's gassed.
It's going to be that because he's gassed and he can't go more than whatever. And they're like, even if he has like a fraction of his power, Jake Paul is still on every steroid known to man. The dude is going to get punched 2 or 3 times. He's going to tough it out. And then they're going to hug for 10 minutes.
Yep. But I hope my take was, I really hope that the entire fight can be captured in a GIF.
Yeah. Like I know what you're saying, John.
Get distributed a lot.
I know what you're saying, John, and I agree with it. But all of Tyson's career were people that were jacked out and could take a punch like nobody else until he tagged
people,
them.
People like twice his size, 30, which
yeah,
Jake Paul is
30
not.
Years ago.
Yep. Yep.
Right. That's a long ass time.
But these were guys who had been in 40 fights each. You know, had worked their way up to like challenge him for the heavyweight championship match.
Jake Paul has never boxed a boxer. Ever. Right? He's only boxed MMA guys. So like,
is that true?
100%. Logan Paul has boxed some boxers. Jake Paul has never boxed a professional boxer in his life, or at least competitively. He's obviously like sparred with them. So he has never boxed a real boxer. And you're like, it's probably going to be a boring, lame hug fest, but like, hot damn, yeah, exactly. If he can connect once, even if Jake Paul can shrug it off, I feel that his bell is rung like it has never been rung before. Even if he's not down for a 10 count.
Wasn't this Tyson's like Achilles heel even back when he, you know, his final few fights were all him getting gassed and then not being able to
because he lost his love of boxing. Now he's found it again. He found his smile.
Who's fighting like Evander Holyfield?
That's not true at all. He hates boxing. He hates punching people, and he hates getting punched. And he did toad DMT, and he's found love and found God. And he's only doing this for money. It's like so transparent. He's done so many. I've listened to him on so many podcasts where he's like, "I just don't want to hurt people anymore. I've changed, guys."
And you watch Jake Paul's videos.
Not that guy though.
That guy deserves his head knocked off.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I don't know. It's so transparently a work, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I'm happy with the fact that it's, and not to say everybody even has the subscription anymore, whatever. But like, I'm happy it's a Netflix thing and not like a real pay per view. I was like, I know someone who has Netflix. Like,
that's the thing. We're all gonna watch it. It's on Netflix. There ain't no way I'm not gonna watch.
And that's the Snyder thing, right? Where they were saying, like, yeah, because everybody has Netflix, more people probably saw Rebel Moon than saw Barbie, was like what Zack Snyder said.
Number 2 is coming out this year.
Number 2 is coming out in a month. Like, it's April 19th.
Oh, man. We should put that movie on the list. We all watched it.
Why did we not? I feel that it's not fair to watch it until we watch the Snyder Cut. Which one do we rank?
Who's it not fair to, us or Snyder? I don't know if I...
I mean,
I love the idea of Zack Snyder being the producer, being like, "Director, you need to go back and recut this. We can't release this way." Wait,
you're the fucking producer.
So stupid. I mean, I get Netflix is that is some brilliant workmanship from Netflix. Is one, they can have the lower rated one, period, which is a thing that they care about for streaming, and then two, they can pay one guy once to make two movies. And all they care about is hours streamed. So, like, some people will watch both. Some people will watch one. Some people will be like, okay, well, my family can watch one, and I can watch the other. Like, it's a good bit of business for Netflix. It just sucks that it's Zack Snyder that's doing it.
And it's bad.
And it's a bad film. I told you I know a guy that did some of the animation on it. He was ashamed to admit it.
Well, he should be proud of his work because it did look...
That's what I said. I was like, listen, buddy. And apparently it was, like, fun.
If he's an animator, he could turn the volume off and put that shit in his portfolio.
That's 100%. Fine. Apparently it was also fun to work on because of the, like, quote-unquote lower budget, they were given a lot of, like, creativity in how they were going to do, like, shortcuts. Like, they were just sort of like how with our restrained budget can we do this? It was kind of like... The way he described it was sort of like when Robert Rodriguez talks about like how to make the shot look as cool as possible for as cheap as possible. Not just like, I have this very specific image and you have to do it. And you're like, it's going to look bad because we don't have enough money. And you end up with like cats or whatever the hell. Like,
it also sounds a little bit like the Marvel method. I'll tell you what the rough plot is, artist. You do all the work and then I'll come back in and write the word balloons.
Maybe. But, I mean, I think he had a very specific script. I just think he just, you know, was like, whatever. Then he flies the Griffin around for a bunch. How long does this have to be? 5 minutes. We cannot afford Griffin flying around for 5 minutes.
Zoom in on his face.
Yeah, exactly. Whee! Shadow. Shadows across the stone, whatever, you know, like, yeah. That's kind of fun. I'm like presented with a problem and being allowed to, like, creatively navigate your way instead of just being dictated exactly what to do.
Which does sound like a lot of fun until Zack Snyder does the interviews and was like, yeah, I'm just so proud of the vision that I had. Excelsior.
Excelsior. Zack Snyder needs a special word. Zack Snyder needs a special word of power like Stan Lee did. It's just something edgy and shitty. We could rank Rebel Moon. I don't... hang on. We'll rank Rebel Moon when we finished watching it, because it's only been part one.
Fine. God. All right. We have to watch the other one.
Yeah, we know. You know we do.
Speaking of terrible movies.
Yeah.
I saw a movie that just came out and is actually good and timely and everything.
Yeah, let's do that.
Did it have dialogue?
It does. Dune 2 is a good amount of dialogue.
Does it stick it to landing? Come on, that's the question.
I think it sticks to landing really, really well.
Because Denis Villeneuve says he hates dialogue. He doesn't think it belongs in movies.
The first one was pretty sparse on dialogue.
This one is, there's also a lot of sparseness in the dialogue. There are, like, little, I don't know, it is certainly sparse in terms of dialogue. There's lots of sweeping scenes that are spoke with as little dialogue as possible. A lot of the dialogue happens between a mom and her unborn fetus.
Mm-hmm. That's core to the story.
Plenty of dialogue. Well, and they also did the thing. Well, they did the thing. So, what's her name? What's Paul's little Alia. Sister's name? Alia. Alia is not born in this film because they were just like, you know what? The fetus talks in general. We can just get away from having a toddler film in the desert for like a year and the complications of like what that means for having staff on site, children shooting schedules, like teaching and whatever else.
They would have had to CG it and it would have looked like a Muppet.
Yeah, exactly. And then with the weird adult voice. And they were like, if it was, it would either be unsettling or silly. Yeah, kind of. And you're like, in one way or the other, they were like, we felt that it would be distracting. So we can just have it as a fetus talking to Jessica the whole time. Mm-hmm. And like basically the storyline still moves ahead as though Alia's like doing what she does in the book.
Like, I don't know. There's a key scene at the end of the book where like 1.5-year-old Alia stays behind after the Harkonnens take over or like they invade. And she gets brought in front of the Baron and she assassinates him with the Gamjabar. I guess that doesn't happen.
Paul kills the Baron.
I don't know, man. It's kind of a bummer. There's all these Bene Gesserit who are watching Alia, and she's talking using like complex polysyllabic words that her unformed palate can't quite make out, and they all hate her. She's supposed to be like horribly weird and unsettling.
Yeah. You know, it is weird that the lady talks to a fetus the whole time. The killing of Baron Harkonnen is delightfully like undersold though. Like Paul just like walks up and is like pacha, and then just like turns and like goes to leave, and then like the Emperor's like, what the hell, man? Like, it's like only then does Paul turn and be like, I guess there's other stuff to do. Like, he just kind of like wanders in and wants to just the Harkonnen homeworld is super cool. Like the entire all those sequences are entirely in black and white because of the black sun. Like cool. The whole Lauf. What's his name? Sting?
Fade Rotha.
Fade Rotha, as they say it, whatever. His fighting down, fighting the last of the Atreides clan and like all in like in black and white is super cool, super high contrast. Mm-hmm. Looks real cool. Yeah.
There's this character, the Baron Fenring, I think. He's like kind of important to the political stuff, and they always cut him, or at least they cut him in the other one. Do you remember that character?
Yeah. No, I don't think he's around in that at all. So yeah, I mean, like I said, it sticks to landing pretty well, and they've also kind of the ending definitely sets it up, and he also said that he is going to adapt Messiah, but his series is going to be a trilogy, so he's like it's going to be an abridged Messiah, which I think makes sense because I feel that it's 2024, and if you don't explain why Paul Atreides like ascending to the role of Messiah of the galaxy is like could be a bad thing. Like it's kind of a weird point to end on to be like, he did it. He saved them all. Hooray. That'd be like a weird spot to end your film series.
You know, the first Star Wars movie kind of could have ended on that note, you know, and it would have been like a fine movie in and of itself.
Sure.
You know.
Like they also they expand Chiani a lot. Like they turn her into the viewpoint character, which I think is smart in the way that like who else are you going to latch onto for like, hey, is this crazy? Because you have like Jessica's pushing Paul, go, turn into the Messiah. Messiah's like, maybe I am the Messiah. you know, and so you're getting detached from Paul as he expands his brain with worm juice and starts seeing the future and the present. And you're like, wait, who do I, as an audience member, ground myself on? So they kind of like build upon the Chiani character to make her that, which I think is cool. And also just her just kind of being like, hey, Paul, you don't got to do this. Like, none of this is necessary. And he's like, yes, it is. Yeah. Cool. It makes him a little more reluctant, too, than I remember him being. Like, I know he had, like, reservations, but, like, this really has him kind of like trying not to, like, he's like, I've seen the visions of like billions dying and whatever else, and like, don't want to do that. Like, he doesn't want to go south at all. And is like trying not to go south because he knows that that's where the, like, the fanatics and stuff are. And he's trying to like spend more time in the north to not go south, even though Jessica goes south, which I don't know if that happens in the book. I thought they all went together. Yeah.
Okay. No, they do. She goes down. I mean, I don't remember the exact order of events, but there's definitely like a big thing about when he goes down there is when he's going to have to do his final test and call a great maker. And then,
oh no, no, he does that in the north in this one. Huh. Yeah, yeah, like he does, like he calls the, he rides the old, his big old
man of the desert.
Yeah, he rides a big sandworm. They call him the grandfather, I think, or something. They call him a grandfather of the desert or something like that. Anyway, the shots of them riding around the worms is super cool. It looks super fun. Wood ride worm.
Yeah.
And just like, with like hooks just shooting across the desert. Seems super cool. But yeah, he like becomes like Fremen and accepted as Fremen and becomes like, acknowledged as the Muad'Dib all in the north without ever going into the south. Like, the south is kind of like worshiping him from afar, but he's trying not to like go south to not fulfill his vision, which I think is kind of like a neat thing. Like, a little more reluctant than just sort of like,
yeah. I mean, but is that before or after he drinks the water of life?
Before.
Then he goes south, drinks the water of life, and then goes back now that he's fully the Kwisatz Haderach. Do they say the words Kwisatz Haderach?
Yeah, they say that all the time. They say it multiple
times. That's great. All right.
Just all kinds of Muad'Dib, and it's then all the words. All the words are all around there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, super, super fun. I thought was better than the first one. More action oriented. They do a lot of like Paul and the Fremen just like smashing up like spice production. So there's like a lot of cool like action scenes that are like done well and interesting.
Enjoy. Go back to the Lynch version and watch the montage of him using the sonic weapons. And they turn that whole sequence after he drinks the water of life into a montage of him smashing Harkonnen stuff. It's so campy and he has no idea what's going on. Lynch.
Yeah. We started watching the Lynch version and then we went to go see Dune 2.
It's such a fucking hot mess. Yeah.
It's trying so hard. So much endless voiceovers.
Yeah.
Just constant voiceover.
45 minutes of voiceover at the start, almost, to just get you going. Yeah.
It's good times.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Jeez.
I can't wait. I'm going to go check it out.
As much as I'm forgiving for superhero movies, I fucking hate Dune.
That's okay, man. It's a hot mess. It has like little bits of quality, right? And then,
did you watch the first one, Scott?
Yeah. No, yeah. No, not, the, not the Villeneuve one.
Oh,
the Lynch one, yeah.
Don't forget that movie. The production of the Lynch version, anyway, led to Alien, right?
Mm-hmm.
Indirectly.
Mm-hmm. You could really, really tell watching Dune, though, that it was like they thought they were making Star Wars.
They wanted to be. They wanted to. Some producers looked at what other science fiction shit can we make that's going to be like a Star Wars? Oh, Dune! Everybody, let's make one of these.
The first fight where they're in the shield suits there, they're just blocking cubes, flopping around.
The thing is, it sort of could have worked if they had been able to pull it off right. And the Villeneuve version of those was pretty badass, if I remember those scenes correctly.
The
only thing of Dune I've ever liked was that documentary of Jodorowsky.
Yeah.
The Jodorowsky's Dune is great.
I will write it with love.
It's the only Dune product I've ever seen or read that I've got any enjoyment from.
Hold on. Did you not play Dune 2, the video game by Westwood Studios?
No.
Because that was a fucking masterpiece. It was like right at the same time as Warcraft came out. And it was like better than Warcraft in a big way. And it had three different houses you could play. You could play Atreides, Harkonnen, and Ordos that they made up to just be like another faction in the game. And it was like a real time strategy game. It was amazing. Amazing, amazing. And it probably directly led, in fact, it did directly lead to Command and Conquer, if you remember that, which was for a while as big as Warcraft.
Red Alert was huge.
Yeah, man.
CNC was fun.
It was Westwood Studios, which was, I think they did the Dune 2.
No, that anyway, as a property, I find it poisonous. I don't want anything to do with it.
It's amazing.
Listen, I really do not remember much from the books. I read them, like I said, either late high school or early Sejep. So like over 20 years ago. I don't know if I finished the second one, and I'm relatively sure I did not finish the third one. Mm-hmm. Like, I just remember the first one was pretty fun.
Yeah, Oren, my roommate, was a big, big fan. He used to insist that I read the book. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it took me like 3 months to read that first book, and it's like 300 pages. I was like,
and it's the breezy one.
It's the breezy one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Anyway, so I saw a movie that was pretty good, and I feel that means you're going to force me to watch a movie that's really bad. Is that where we're heading with this?
It's not really bad. Come on, it's a. Can I say what the director is?
I didn't see your reply.
No. It's hot shit. It's great. It's magical.
Okay. It's cool. Yeah. Go for it.
A feast of cinema. Okay. So it's in Ingmar Bergman. Okay.
Quality. Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah. Quality director. Classical.
Who directed other films such as? Like the name rings a bell, but I couldn't place anything.
The seventh seal, wasn't that Ingmar Bergman? Mm. Pretty sure. Come on, classic.
Scott's network is struggling.
Yeah, it sure is.
he's an all timer great Hollywood titan director.
Okay.
The Seventh Seal, Persona, Wild Strawberries, Autumn Sonata, Cries and Whispers, fucking Academy Award winner.
Okay.
Widely considered one of the greatest and most influential film directors of all time.
Okay, and you're saying this is directed by this man?
Mm-hmm.
Roger Ebert awarded it 4 stars, this movie. So it's quality. Ebert usually has a good head on his shoulders for these things. Mm-hmm. A big, exciting, ambitious film, relatable to audiences.
Mixed.
Fourth best film of 83.
Yeah.
Fourth best film of 83.
It did have, we're not coming at you with a gem here. It did have a lot of negative reviews too.
That's true.
But okay. But big time critics love this movie.
What do I know any of the stars? What is the genre? Like, I, other than Ingmar Bergman, who I'm not hyper familiar with, and 1983, I have nothing. All I know was 1983 was Return of the Jedi came out, and Ingmar Bergman did not direct Return of the Jedi.
No,
I was born in 1983.
You don't know anyone who's in this movie.
Pernilla Alwyn, Bertel Guve, Jan
Malmsteen. Genre. What is the genre of the film?
It's a period piece, a Swedish period piece.
Elements
it won
of fantasy.
4 Academy Awards. Wow. Scott, this is so generous.
Right?
Uh-huh.
It touches on themes of magic and reality. Family conflicts. It goes into some religious themes, Christianity and Judaism.
And it sounds like The Sound of Music.
Actually, it's kind of like a Swedish Sound of Music. It's not too far off. I don't think it's a musical, though. I don't think Bergman was
saying
into that.
Themes of family and Judaism. And
God, it won. It was nominated for Best Director, Best Original Screenplay. It won Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design. Like, you're getting a gem of a film here.
Okay. There's no way.
Dr. Zhivago.
We gotta just give it to him. So it's called Fanny and Alexander, a film by Ingmar Bergman.
Fanny and Alexander.
Yeah, look it up.
I'm looking it up. Uh-huh. Googling it. And why would this be such a disaster to see this?
I don't think it is a disaster. What? I think you're gonna love it. All 312 minutes of it.
Jesus Christ. Did you just look up the longest movie you could?
Yes. Pretty much.
I looked up the longest movies, and a lot of them were like war epics. And I'm
hold
like,
up,
no,
though. Hold up, sir, madam, and other persons. The TV miniseries is 312 minutes.
No,
I feel that I am in no way obliged.
It was conceived
well, this
as a
is to watch. Well, I'm not ranking the best miniseries ever, am I? I'm ranking the best films ever, and the film is 188.
No,
still
the original,
well over 3 hours.
The original cut version was created later for cinematic release. No.
Exactly. I don't feel the miniseries was nominated for an Academy Award.
It was released.
Nope. The miniseries could not have been nominated for the Academy Award. It was the 188-minute cut that was. Sir.
The series has been released as a complete film. Both versions have been shown in theaters.
That was not the version.
Both versions have been shown in theaters around the world.
I don't know.
We don't want to give you the short one. We don't want you to miss any majesty.
Just saying. Release. Acts in the long version. Prologue.
Well, Keith, if you're confused now about which one you've been tasked with watching, it is the 312-minute cut.
The film premiered in 17th of December 1982 at the 188-minute theatrical cut.
We agree on that point.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
This looks magical. And I saw The Seventh Seal in film class, and it was also very thought-provoking and good fun.
Anyway, yes. This is going to take me a very long time to watch, you understand.
Because
312 minutes, in fact.
I'll watch it as, I guess... See, this is... Bergman conceived the presentation as a television series.
He's one of the truly great directors. You're in for a treat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess he does. He remarked it was extremely troubling to cut the film. I had to cut into the nerves and the lifeblood of the film. So, by the way, I just got this text message. My dad called during recording, and I ignored his call because I was recording. But he gave me an important update, saying, "He asked my brother about Dr. Marcus, the thing with cutting your fingers, and he did it to him too."
Wow!
He was cutting both our fingers up every time we went.
Continues.
And his name was Dr. Marcus, and I looked him up, and he's sadly dead. Otherwise, I really would have reached out.
Hold on, but he's got to have a nurse who is busy, like, fixing up people's fingers all the day.
No, you just put a little Band-Aid on there, and it's done. Like, it's a tiny, it's a lancet. It's like a, you put a Band-Aid on it by the next day. Yeah.
We do them at work, too. We do, you do have to do finger pokes for certain blood tests. Mm-hmm. Just... Not all the time, man.
Why did he need so much of my blood?
Right?
Yeah, so yeah. So he did it to my brother as well. That's so weird. Fanny and Alexander? Alexandra?
Alexander. By the great
Ingmar. If it's a good miniseries...
Movie. It's a movie.
I mean, he conceived of it as a television series, it says right here.
Mm-hmm. It was released in theaters.
Yeah, it has since been released as a complete film. The 312-minute cut is one of the longest cinematic films in history. Mm-hmm. There you go.
I didn't look for, like, The Stand, the television series.
But yeah. But that's it. But he conceived it knowing that nobody would have the run. Nobody would want to watch that runtime, or at least assuming. Bergman conceived of it as a television miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, eventually. There's no way I'm watching it in, like, one sitting. Like, I listen, how long was the Snyder Cut? I made it through that. That's, like, 3.5. So this is, what, 4.5? No, 5? Five and a bit.
Yeah,
that is a lot of fucking movie.
5 and a bit. Yeah, but I'm like, just break it up like a TV show.
Hey, I was pitching the Yoko Ono John Lennon movie that's just 45 straight minutes of him standing naked in front of a wall.
Nice.
Yeah.
There were a lot of, like, weird experimental things that I looked at and was like, this movie is 72 hours long.
Yeah, like so the
it's, actually, it's actually nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you call it. There's, like, Warhol or whatever has this, like, the eight.
The Zoom, right? It's like a Zoom for 72 minutes or something.
Yeah, something like that. But then there's also one of his films is, I think, just of the Empire State Building for, like, 3 days. So apparently it is Prologue, Familjen Ekdal Fyra Jul, which is the Ekdal family celebrates Christmas, the Valnedal, the Wraith, Uprotet, the Breakup, Sumarins Handelsar, the Summer's Events, Demonerna, the Demons, Epilogue. So those are acts in the full version.
I can't wait to hear about it.
Oh, man. I'm into
this. Listen up, though. If you think I'm watching a 5-hour film and not talking about it for at least 3 consecutive episodes, you've got another thing coming. 90S will be the Fanny and Alexander show for a while. The poster looks so cute. Tiny Orc Alexander.
You better watch yourself on this, though. If you do that and becomes our best downloaded episodes, we're going to become the Ingmar Bergman cast.
Hey, man, for it. I would recommend the Seventh Seal. There's like a ton of visual stuff from that movie that is transposed into cinema in the modern era. Like the knight in black and white doing playing a game of chess with the Grim Reaper. Like that's where that comes from.
I mean, honestly, other than runtime. But you know what I bet you happens?
Fucking nothing?
Well, so here. I mean, here's the story, right? Following the death of the children's father, their mother remarries a prominent bishop who becomes abusive towards Alexander for his vivid imagination. Do you know, I'm willing to bet money that the third act of the film, the fifth or sixth at this point, like, I bet you Demonerna, the demons, the final act of the film, does not involve the bishop doing battle with Alexander as they fight using their imaginations, using their same powers. Like, I feel that is not the climax of this film.
I bet it's
if it is.
Have you ever seen the music video, "We're Not Gonna Take It"? What do you want to do with the rest of your life?
We want to rock!
Hang it up here, playing on your electric twanger. It's that, but 5 hours long.
Yeah. Might be amazing.
D. Snyder is La Demonerta.
I don't know. I think this could be really good.
I think there is a chance there. It's going to be really good. A lot of people really like this movie.
The script is even semi-autobiographical. It's about poor Ingmar.
Do you know how good a script would have to be nominated for Best Original Screenplay when it was written in Swedish? It's got to be a great script.
Yeah, in 1983, yeah.
It's got to be a good script.
Mm-hmm.
All right, looking forward to it.
Have a good time.
3 Guldbag Awards.
What can
it won,
I say?
It won the Guldbag Award.
You're welcome.
The 19th annual Guldbag Awards. The best Swedish films of 1982 and 1983. Anyway, yeah, alright. Stay tuned in for July or whatever when we finish watching. Anyway, this is INES, everybody.
Hi, thanks for sticking around to the very end of this show. That means you're our number one fan. As our number one fan, maybe you're wondering a way that you can show your support for this. We've set up a few ways, and the boys are going to tell you about it now.
If you like this show, you might know other people that like the show, or maybe they'll like some of the other stuff that we're doing on the website. If that's the case, you can tell them all about it using all of the social networks like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're on all of those, or you could just, you know, send people links directly to the website. Or if you live in a world without the internet and you only listen to podcasts, you can tell people about it with your human mouth. There's other ways we could support us, John.
If your interest in supporting us extends to the financial section, you might consider patreon.com/9to5cc. If you go there, you can get perks like early content, you can get your questions answered on the air, and you could get extra art.
We've been doing this show for a long time, so we kind of know what we're doing. Not really.
9to5.cc, podcasts, blogs, and comics, made in Montreal since 2011.